from the time that they pronounced me dead was a good 45 minutes.
They cut my clothes and then they paddled my heart, because my heart had stopped. And I could see people screaming and crying, but I didn't realize that was actually my physical body because I was somewhere else.
The only thing that I could feel, if you could imagine, absolute love and peace. There wasn't anything else to be felt.
I was greeted by people I'd known in the past.
I'm back home again.
Incredibly safe and felt at home.
Welcome, welcome to Round Trip Death, everybody. And today we are traveling clear over to Zurich, Switzerland to meet with our new friend, Dennis Bullock. And Dennis, welcome. How are you?
Great, great, great.
Tell me how your day is going already.
My day is going great because I love to do interviews to share my experiences and that to help humanity become more aware of who they really are.
So before we get going, and I'm going to let our listeners know, this is going to be a spectacular interview today because we're going to hear about Dennis's really cool spiritual experience that he had before he had his near-death experience, if I can put a different label on them, if you don't mind, Dennis.
Sure.
So we're going to hear about that first and then get into his more classic, you know, dying and come back kind of experience. But first, tell us, who's Dennis? Let us get to know you a little bit.
Okay. Dennis Bullock is a musician, a saxophonist, a singer. Worked with a lot of famous people.
Go ahead and name drop a little bit.
Quincy Jones, David Sanborn, Marcus Miller, The Stylistics, James Brown, Prince, Chaka Khan.
That's all. Nobody too big besides James Brown, Prince, etc. No, those are huge. So you've been a professional musician for how long?
All my life. All my life. I mean, that music was was a thing that drawed me, you know, singing and playing saxophone. I'm a saxophonist and a singer. My mother bought me my first saxophone, so that's when I started to play.
So what brought you to Zurich?
Well, there's a Montreux Jazz Festival. They have every year, and they have all types of people from all around the world come to perform at the festival. So I wanted to be in that festival, and I got a Swiss agent because I saw that a lot of the famous artists, they all had Swiss agents, you know, like Al Jarreau when he was alive, Santana when he was alive, George Benson, Chaka Khan, you know, all of the really big names, they all had Swiss agents. So I said, well, I want to get a Swiss agent. So I got a Swiss agent, and then he booked me for the Montreux Jazz Festival, and I liked it here, so I've been in Switzerland ever since.
I've got to come visit you.
Oh, sure. It's a lot of mountains. It's kind of a mix. It's kind of, I kind of call it the California of Europe, sort of.
Yeah.
But without the stress and without the danger zone. Because we have a lot of mountains here, so you get a choice of, you can go city life, or you can go nature mountain life. So that's why I'm kind of in between. I'm not directly in the city, about 45 minutes out of the city, and I'm in the nature. So, yeah, where they grow the wine, the vineyards, and there's some mountains and stuff like that. Because I like nature, you know.
I haven't done any skiing in Europe yet. It's a bucket list, so I'm going to get over there one of these days.
Well, if you come over this side, you're going to call me, man, so I can show you around.
I'd love it. I would love it. Okay, let's jump right into it. Let's go back to when you were living in Montreal.
Okay.
And we're going to talk about your experience with your mother shortly after she passed on. But give us a little background. What was your relationship like with her? Maybe your family upbringing, just a little bit.
Well, my family upbringing was, my father was a Marine and a cop. So it was very dutiful and very strict. Okay. My mother was the total opposite. My mother was light, love, fun, joy. You know, she's the kind of person that would, you know, come show me in the morning, come look at the birds. Look at the birds. They're so beautiful. Listen, listen. You know, she was the joy of my life. My father was just more, he loved me, but it was more of a duty. You know, what do you want for Christmas? Okay, here's your Christmas gift. What do you want for birthday? Okay, here. But that's it. He didn't, you know, my father loved me in a dutiful way, where my mother really showed her emotions about everything. She was a very positive person. So she gave me the love that I needed. My father just more was like a discipline, duty, you know, responsibility, you know, because of his upbringing. He came from a military family. So that's basically it. Me and my mother were very, very close because she quit her job to marry my father. And back in those days, that was how it was. She saved her money for 3 years and bought me my first saxophone. And my mother and I was very, very close. She was the light and the joy in my life, for sure, without a doubt. Yeah, that was pretty much the relationship with my mom.
So what happened to her?
Well, she got sick. She got lung cancer, and then she died. And when she died, it was like somebody turned out the lights in my life, like the light switch. Click. My world was crashing. After the first 2 weeks that she died, I started to drink every night. I would go to the bar, drink, come. I was living in Montreal, Canada. Come home and sit on the side of the, come in my room, turn out the light and sit on the side of my bed and cry myself to sleep every night. And I did that for about a week and a half until this one night. This night I was doing my usual routine, came in my room, turned out the light, sat on the side of my bed, and I went to go untie my sneakers. But when I went to go untie my sneakers, I noticed that there was light on the ground. And I said, that can't be. You know, I know I turned out the light. That's impossible. And this is the crazy part. When I looked up, it was like the sun you see in the sky was in my room, literally. And I looked at this with my mouth open like that, and it was like a wave from the ocean covered me, but the water was love. It was like that. Love just washed over me. And if that wasn't enough, there was these two stars inside the sun, which was God, which I found out later. And they just floated out to me. And as they floated out to me, I noticed that the smaller star was my mother. And the first thing I said, Mom, because I knew, I felt it so deeply. I said, Mom, it's like that over there. Because it was so much love that it was like, I won the lottery for $1 billion. I'm in Hawaii and I'm sitting on the beach and everybody around me just loves me. It was like that. It was so much. And so she floated out to me and she started to talk to me. But the way she was talking to me, like I'm talking to you right now, but the conversation was kind of also being shot into my body, which means like I felt the conversation in my body as she was talking. I could feel it. Every word was in my body. And it was a kind of like a telepathy, even though I could hear her clear, like I'm talking to you. But it was just being shot into me, that whole conversation.
Just a higher form of communication.
Oh, much higher. Much higher.
And did she look like her? Because you mentioned a star.
Yes, she stayed as like a light of star, a light, like a star. She stayed like that, but she was talking like a star was just talking to me. That's how she was doing it. She said, I'm going to tell you the future in 1 week, that you're going to know that this is not a dream. This is not fake. This is not an illusion. She said, you're going to get a job next week. And she said, there's going to be a guy at this club, a bouncer, And she said, he's going to be a homosexual and he's going to be a psychopath. Now, she said, whatever you do, don't get into an argument with him. And then she started to talk about timelines. She said, there's two timelines that will happen if you get into an argument with him. The first timeline, he will kill you. The second timeline, you will kill him, but you go to jail for the rest of your life for murder. And she said, one of these two timelines are going to happen if you get into an argument with him. And I said, no, no, Mama, I listen to what you're going to say. I'm so happy to see you. Of course, I do exactly whatever you tell me. And she said, and there's another thing, your girlfriend, she has three kids that you don't know about. And she's going to try to have a fourth kid with you. So be careful about that. And then there was a pause in the conversation. And then I said, but Mom, who is this other light that's with you? Because this light was bigger than her. This light was like 7 feet, okay? 7 foot tall light. And when I asked her, who was this light spoke to me, said, I'm an escort. I escorted your mother to the earth. And I said, an escort? Oh, wow. Well, I said, I got some questions. And as I said, you know, I have God in my room. My room is like Star Wars right now. It's all lit up. So I said, I got some questions. I want to know who's going to be my wife? How many kids I'm going to have? Why am I here? And this, I call it like an angel. It said, I'm going to answer all your questions, but you won't be allowed to remember only what your mother says. So it answered every question I asked. But I could only remember what my mom said. And then my mother told me after the angel said that, then my mother said, I love you and I'll always be around you, but you won't realize that I'm around you like you are, like I am tonight. You won't realize it as much, but I'll always be around you. And then she said she loved me. And then they both floated back to the sun. That was like waiting in my room patiently, back to the sun. And then my lights started to dim like ice cubes in a glass melting. Slowly but surely, my room got dark and dark and dark. And when it totally got dark, tears burst out my eyes. Man, they just burst out my eyes because I said, nobody's ever going to believe this. Nobody's ever going to believe this happened, man. Nobody's going to believe this. But I got the proof.
Okay, before you hop into that, I want to interject just a couple of things. And I want to hear about the proof. It's interesting that you said you learned all these things, had all the questions answered, but you couldn't remember them. That is not unusual. I've had other people on this show tell me similar things. For example, one person said, I was shown the creation of the world and how it happened, and I can't remember it. I know I saw it, I know I learned it, but I can't remember it. And many other things similar to that. And I have, you know, ideas of why I think maybe that is. Maybe it's better for us or something. But isn't it interesting that you would be taught something that you would not be able to remember right now? Like, what's the point? Have you thought about that?
Well, the thing is that at that time, I hadn't met my kids or who I'm going to marry, or I hadn't met them. And maybe if they had told me, it would have influenced the future somehow, you know, because it was obvious that they knew, my mother knew the future. I look at it like this. We're on the bottom floor, but they're in the Empire State Building at the top. They can see all around in the future, in the past. They can see it all. We can only see the ground floor, which is right in front of us. So that's why at that time, those specific questions, if I had remembered, it might have influenced me in the wrong way, or that person that I would have met, it might have changed things somehow. You know, it's like, I guess it's like time travel. You know, if you go and if you mess up too many things in the timeline that you're on, you kind of can change the future also.
And would it really be good for us to know all of the future? No.
No, it was not necessary. I mean, well, yes and no. I mean, in my case, with my mother, yes, it was necessary with what she had to say. But what I had to say, no.
Okay, let's get into that. So she told you two things. Make the right choice about having a confrontation with this bouncer.
Yes.
And she told you about your girlfriend having three children.
Right, right. That I didn't know about.
That you did not know about. How long had you been dating her?
About a year and a half, almost 2 years.
And maybe she has kept a huge secret this whole time.
Oh, most definitely. But I'm going to tell it in the story.
Let's talk about the bouncer first. Go for it.
Okay. Like I said, I have the proof. Now, my band at the time of after that incident, my band, we hadn't worked in about 2-3 weeks. It was like a dry spell, really bad. And the next day after the incident with my mother, I got a phone call from the band. Hey, we got a job. Now, I didn't tell my band what had happened with my dead mother because I didn't want them to think, oh, you know, he's a great singer, great saxophone player, but he lost it since his mother died, you know. So I didn't mention anything to them. I said, oh, great, we got a job. So I said, oh, wow, things look beginning. I hung up the phone and I said, oh, wow, things are beginning to look like what my mom said. The next day after that, I went to the sound check, we call sound check. The sound check, for people who do not know, it's when the band goes and checks the instruments and the PA, the sound system, to make sure there's no problems before the show, about 3 hours, 4 hours before the show actually starts. So I went to the sound check. There was a huge bouncer at this club. I had never done this club before. And so anyway, we went to do the sound check and I saw this huge bouncer there, but nothing happened. He didn't say nothing to me. I didn't say nothing to him. And we did the sound check. Everything went normal, smooth. And then I left and then I came back for the show at night. And I came in the club and, of course, there was the bouncer, that huge bouncer. But he didn't say nothing to me. I didn't say nothing to him. So far, everything was good. So we did our first set. Great show. People liked it. And we were on our break because we had two shows to do. And while I was on my break, I was talking to the band. This was me and this was the band. So we all were talking on the break. And then this bouncer walked by me and grabbed my butt. Just grabbed it like that. And I was talking and went, hey. And then he walked away and went in the corner. And I said to the guys, hey, guys, did you see that guy that just walked? He just grabbed my butt, man. I got to tell this guy something. And they said, no, they didn't see it. They just saw him pass because I was in front. So they only saw him pass. They couldn't see the grab because I was standing between me and the guy. So I went over this guy and I was really angry. And then I said, hey, wait a minute. Don't lose it, man. Don't lose it. Remember what your mother said. Remember what your mother said. Don't lose it, man. Now, I want to say this really clear, is that I have nothing against homosexual, gay, transsexual, whatever a person's sexual preferences. I have nothing against that. But if you know that I'm not a homosexual and you still come after me, of course, I'm going to try to defend my manhood. That's just how I am. But this time I said, don't lose it, man. Don't lose it. Just tell them you're not like that and not to touch you. And that's what I did. I went over and said, listen, man, I'm not like that. Please don't touch me no more. He said, you had too much to drink, man. I didn't touch you. I said, yeah, you did touch me, man. But I'm telling you, I'm not like that. Please don't touch me. And then he said, why did you tell your friends? I said, I told my friends because that's what you did. But listen, I'm not like that. So please don't touch me. And then I walked away because if I'd have stayed longer, the conversation was going right to the point where my mother was talking about.
Yeah, it was escalating.
Yes. So I left. And when I left, I did my second show. I didn't hang in that club after. Like normally I would hang out, you know, you do the show and now it's finished. Everybody's like, I didn't hang out because I didn't like that, this guy and the situation. So I finished my show and I left the club. He didn't say nothing to me no more after that. And I went home. Next day, I get a phone call from the band because they stayed. I didn't stay. And they said, hey, man, did you hear what happened? I said, no, what happened? He said, remember that guy you said grabbed you and stuff, that bouncer? I said, yeah. He said he got into an argument with the club owner and crushed both of his rib cages. And now he's in jail for manslaughter. And he's in jail to this day, okay? And the other thing I want to say, this guy was huge. I mean, I don't know if you ever saw the Hulk, the green guy.
Yeah, Al Ferrigno.
Yes, he was in that category.
Wow.
Huge. He said that to me, and I said, oh, wow, man, that's messed up, man. Because that club owner, when I went to that club, I noticed that I knew that club owner. I knew him from another club. And he was a good friend. He was cool people, man. And now he didn't deserve that, to die. So I hung up the phone. I still didn't say nothing to the band about what I knew. I hung up the phone and I said, oh, my God, everything my mother said is coming true. Everything. And I said, well, if that's true, my girlfriend. I said, oh, no, it can't be. I knew her for almost 2 years now. Can't be. She has 3 kids. No way. I got to call her. So I called her right away. I said, and the phone rang. She said, hello. I said, hey, it's me. How you doing? And I said, tell me something. Just tell me the truth. Do you have 3 kids? And then the phone went silent. And then after a little bit of silence, she said, who told you? And I said, no way. I said, I got to ask you again. Maybe you didn't understand. I said, do you have 3 kids? And she said, yes, I do. But who told you? She wanted to know because she was angry. And I said, well, I'm going to tell you who told me. My dead mother told me. And I said, me and you are finished. I said, if you're going to deny your kids, I don't know what else you could be hiding. I said, I could accept you with your kids if you had been truthful about it. But you denied it for almost 2 years. I said, we're finished. And then I hung up the phone. And that was it. And then I knew everything my mother said was true. And at the end of that point, I said, well, I'm going to try to go back to normal life, because I still felt that nobody is going to believe that story.
Sure.
Nobody's going to understand or even believe that story. I said, let's try to go back to normal life. Okay. Now I'm getting ready to start the situation going leading to the NDE. Now, I tried to get back to normal life, and I started to follow this singer. He was in this Renewed Platters, not the original Platters, but a renewed group, okay? Because the original Platters, I'm too young for that. But a renewed group. This guy was great. He had contracts in Germany, Montreal, Canada, albums in Canada. We won the best act in Canada, a lot of things, and contracts in Germany and everywhere in America. And he was great, a killer vocals. And one night, as I was doing his shows with him, learning, because he was like my mentor, he introduced me to drugs. And I started to do drugs with him, which I'm not so proud about, I have to say. But I thought that was the way, because he was successful. I said, I want to be successful too. So I started to do drugs with him. So I did drugs with him. And then all of a sudden, about, I guess, a year, he died. After one weekend of a show we did together, the next day he passed away. And when he passed away, that was my wake-up call. I stopped cold turkey. No drugs, no nothing. And I replaced it. And I said, I'm going to replace it with marijuana. I said, I smoke a joint every now and then. That's okay. Once a month or whatever, that's okay. But no more hard drugs. So that's what I did. With my new girlfriend, we were in an apartment in Montreal, Canada, and we ran out of marijuana. I didn't have any marijuana that day. Now, this is not against musicians, but I have to say, most musicians know where to get marijuana, no matter what country or no matter what city they're in. It's just like that. So I ran out of marijuana, so I just called one of my musician friends and said, hey, you got any marijuana? I ran out. I don't have any. And he said, sure. I'm going to bake it in a cake, and I'll bring it over to you. I said, great. I never had it in a cake before. So he baked it in a cake. Now, I found out later that he put tons and tons and tons of marijuana in that cake. A lot, a super lot. And this is street marijuana. This is not that, you know, like they have it now. It's all processed.
Yeah, regulated.
Chemical free and all that.
Measured, all that kind of stuff. But when you say a lot, compare it to like one joint. Was it like 10? The amount of 10? Was it?
No, I would say more like the amount of 30 or 40.
Okay.
Or maybe more.
Maybe more. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe more.
He was being very generous.
Well, the thing was, I guess he was, you know, because he thought it was like an honor, you know, hey, you know, the super cool musician, man, I'm going to make sure he can take, you know, a little piece of this cake and he's going to get blasted. So he poured the whole kitchen sink into, I mean, a bag full. So you're talking about maybe 40, 50 joints or more, okay, in that one chocolate cake, okay?
Yeah.
Now, okay, he brought the cake over to my apartment, left it with me and my girlfriend, and he left. I never took marijuana in food or in the cake. I always smoked it. So I cut a small piece for her, and I cut a small piece for me, because my friend didn't tell me how much marijuana he put in it, so I didn't know at all. I took a small piece for me, a small piece for her. We both ate it. And I said, 10 minutes went by. And I said, do you feel anything? She said, no. I said, I don't feel anything either. I said, maybe we got to eat more.
Now, hang on. Did you not feel it because the effects are a lot slower when you eat it versus smoking it?
What I get is that, yes, the effects are a lot slower when you eat it than smoking it. But it's more potent when you eat it than smoking it. Because it's going directly into your bloodstream. Whether smoking it, you're kind of regulating it as you take in or take out. Your lungs are regulating it. But with food, no, you're going directly into the bloodstream.
But my understanding is it takes longer. So 10 minutes went by and you're like, didn't work.
Yeah. Yeah, because I never had it in a cake. I never ate it. So
yeah.
I thought, you're going to eat it and maybe it's going to be, you know, it's going to be faster even because, you know, it's going straight into the body. And you know, so 10 minutes went by, nothing happened. So we said, maybe we got to eat more. I think we got to eat more because maybe I didn't know. I thought maybe he didn't put a lot in the cake. So I cut half of the cake and I gave her half, the other half, and I took the other half. Okay. Now, we ate that cake. Another 10 minutes went by. Still nothing.
Wait, you ate the whole cake?
Not me. Me and my girlfriend ate the whole cake.
Yeah, but you each ate half a cake.
Yes, yes, yes.
I'm sorry this isn't funny, but it's kind of funny.
Yeah, because we wanted to get high. You know, we really wanted to get high. Another 10 minutes went by. Nothing happened. And then I said, must be a bad batch. I said, we ate the whole cake, isn't it? And then we start to feel something. Now, when we started to feel something, it felt like we were beginning to get high, but then it started to cut off our bodily functions. For example, I was talking with her, then I would forget to breathe. And I would go, oh, I said, man, I forgot to breathe. This is weird. I said, are you feeling that? She says, yes, I feel the same. And then it started to be difficult for me to even move. And then she said, I think you better call 911 while we still can. And I said, yeah, I think you're right. And I was pulling myself to the phone. And I finally picked up the phone and I dialed 911. And I said, and then they answered, hello, how can we help you? And I said, and this is the embarrassing part. I said, well, I think we ate too much marijuana in a cake and I think we're dying. I said, could you come please help us, please save us? And she said, okay, we'll be right over. Now, what I didn't realize is that If you call 911 about any narcotic, they also call the police. So the police came with them, but when the police arrived at the apartment, there was no evidence because we had ate the whole cake, so there was nothing to charge us with. So they left, and then the ambulance took us. And by the way, it was late by this time. It was like around maybe 4 a.m, okay? And so they took us in separate stretchers. We're on the third floor. We're in a stairwell cased step going down. So as they're carrying us, we have our neighbors on the second and first floor, and they have big windows right in front of the staircase. So they're looking at us. I'm in a stretcher going down as they carried me down, and they're in the window saying, "What happened to them?" You know, lights are flashing like crazy. It's a scene out of David Bowie, Mick Jagger overdosing. It looked like that for me. It was crazy. So they took us out and they rushed us to the hospital. I was glad that they arrived because by the time they arrived, my heart was just trying to beat because I couldn't hardly move at all. And I said, thank God they're here. And my heart was trying to beat and I was really fighting to live because I knew I didn't have long, man. I didn't have long to live. They took us in the ambulance and we rushed to the hospital. And here's another strange thing that happened. As I'm going past the reception at the hospital, there's my dead mother again. But this time she's looking through papers at the reception, looking for me. And she had this like shirt on that she was in a women's club, okay? The club is like 10 women and they go play bingo together. They go on trips together. It's like a women's club. And she had this shirt that I recognized that she always wears at this women's club. And I was in the stretcher and they rolled me. I said, that's weird. There's mom. And they rolled me to my room. Now, what I didn't realize at that time, what I realized later was that I was so close to death. That's why I was able to see her clearly like I see you right now. They wheeled me to my room and they wheeled my girlfriend to another room. She was having other complications. I don't know what, but she was having other complications. But anyway, they wheeled me to my room and they gave me this black drink to drink. I thought it was tar, but I found out later it was charcoal.
Yeah. Helps take toxins out.
Yeah. So I'm laying on my bed in my room. I'm in a hospital room by myself. I'm laying on my bed. They leave my room and they're going to my girlfriend's room to work on her because I don't know if they had to pump her heart again or something was terribly wrong. I'm in the hospital room thinking, wow, okay, I think I'm going to live, man. I'm going to live. So I drink this drink. Tastes horrible. But I drink it down and I'm relaxed. I relax and sit on laying on my bed. And all of a sudden, as I'm relaxing, I start to hear my heart. My heart starts to beat in my ear, and it starts to beat boom, 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 boom. And when it went like that, the last beat, I jumped out of my chair. I mean, I jumped out of my bed. It's like I jumped out of my chair. I just jumped out of my body. And when I jumped out of my body, I said, I'm out. I'm out. And it was so easy. I could see my body in the hospital bed. I was standing next to my body. And I was looking at my hand, just like I'm doing, showing you now. It's funny. It just disappeared a little bit. I was looking at my hand. It had like, I don't know how to explain it like this. I don't know if you used to watch TV and they used to have the emergency broadcasting system come on.
Sure.
Late at night. And there would be the static on the TV. Shh, right? And in this static, there, if you look hard enough, there was like colors. If you really look at the static, it wasn't just gray. My hand was like that, kind of like a gray with a light blue tint around it, all around my hand. I was just looking at it like that. And then I heard a drop of water. It was a sink in my hospital room, and it was just a drop of water just going boop, boop. And for some odd reason... To a soul, a drop of water was amazing. I said, when I heard the drop of water, I said, a drop of water, wow. And the minute I thought about the drop of water, my vision went right up close to it and then right back to where I was standing without me moving. Okay. Then I said, I want to freeze this water so I can see it more because it was dripping. And it was like I was remembering, like I was, like if I give you a bike to ride, you hadn't had a bike in 20 years and I give you a bike to ride, you're still going to know how to ride it, right?
Yes.
Well, this is how it was when I was, when I wanted to stop this water. I said, I want to freeze this water. And I said, oh yeah. And I just pushed my hand across the air, just like I'm doing right now. And the water froze. I stopped time. To a soul, that was not an amazing thing. It was like, okay. And then I said, I'd like to see that water from every angle. And then I opened my hand like this. And when I opened my hand, five of me appeared at the sink. One on the right, one on the left, one under the sink, looking at the water up, one standing, watching those three, another one, and then me watching all of them. And then when I would close my hand, they all suck back to me. And I said, wow, that's cool. And I opened my hand again. They all went back. And I kept doing that.
So you're having fun with this whole thing. I like it.
Yes, yes, yes. And then I said, what if I add a little shake? And then I opened my hand and I did a little shake like that. And they all appeared with a little shake. And I burst out laughing. I burst out laughing. And my laugh sounded on the other side like you're laughing in a Grand Canyon. Ha, 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 ha. And after the laugh, I felt somebody was watching me. Then I heard a voice. And the voice was like how a parent would tell a child at a playground, don't run around a corner too fast, you might fall. Well, this voice said to me in a loving, gentle way, it said, if you don't go back now, you may have to stay. And I said to the voice, oh, yeah, that's right. My heart can't stay stopped that long. And I never questioned who the voice was because I felt it was God talking to me. Oh, yeah, there's another thing. While I was out of my body, the best way to describe this was like, if you have Alka-Seltzer and you put an Alka-Seltzer in water, it dissolves, right?
Sure.
While I was out of my body, information was doing the opposite, expanding. More and more and more and more and more information, more and more information. As long as I was out, more and more and more information. It was like I was getting all this information like a sponge, okay, about things that I was the opposite of what I believed. Okay, a lot of things. Anyway, I'll tell you about that more, but that was happening all the time that I was out of my body. Then I pointed myself, after the voice told me, if I don't go back now, I might have to stay. That was a choice. It was not a command. It was not an order. It was just a choice. And I chose to go back because I said, you know, I don't want to die right now. I don't want to stay right now. I have things I wanted to do in life. I pointed myself at the body. And here's another thing. I looked at the body, but I never wanted to look at the face because I was afraid that my face was going to have some look of death or something on it. So I didn't want to look at my face, but I saw I was out of my body. My body was there and I was standing here. I pointed myself at my body and I like told my soul, okay, now we go into the body. And I jumped into the body and my heart did a double beat like that and it started to beat again. Then that was the end of my NDE.
Okay. Before we go on, I want to interject some questions here.
Okay. Okay.
Sounds like it was like you intuitively knew how to get back in. I find that very interesting. Is that how you felt?
Well, the thing was, I was beginning to remember more and more. The longer I stayed, the more and more I started to remember I had powers. At first, it was funny, you know, but I still was going to try because I said, I'm going to try. That was my intent while I was in my soul. I'm going to try to get back in my body now. But I felt a lot of confidence because I had God that had just said, if you don't go back now, you might have to stay. So that gave me the confidence, hey, you know, and God is going to help me to arrange if I can't get it right. God's going to help me to get back in because God is watching. God is watching me now. That's what I felt. Before, I didn't feel like anybody was watching me. But then after I left, I felt then God was watching me.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
You mentioned that you felt this expansion of information.
Yes.
Can you tell us any of the things? Do you remember any of that information?
Well, this is the good thing. This time I was able to remember everything.
Give us a couple of things you remember.
And these are things that were opposite of what I believed. Okay. For example, on the other side, there's no right or wrong, only perception. God never judges you. Angels never judge you. Guides never judge you. There's no judgment on the other side. There's no judgment in unconditional love. There is no judgment. I got why do people experience hell even? I got that. Because while you're on this plane, I have to tell you that part first. First, we are part of God, who we are. We are part of God and we are gods with a big G. Okay. Part of God, but we also are gods. The other thing is why people experience hell when they die is because when you're a god, whatever you fear, you can create. Okay? You're creating on the other side. Even now, what you're fear, if you have any fears here, you can create, you're creating things on the other side. Now, what happens is when the people die because they're so afraid and they're so powerful gods, because whatever they believe, so be it, because they are a god. Don't forget. So they will experience hell. And what is hell? Hell is what they created, not God. Because if God was to create hell, guess what? Nobody would get up. And the second thing is, hundreds of people are dying and going to hell and getting out, okay? And two things either happen with that. Either they realize, hey, it's me that's creating this place. This is me. It's not real. And they leave. Or they say, oh, God, please help me. And then God comes and says, okay, I'm going to help you get out of your own creation. And he takes you out. And that's it. And they think, oh, God gave me a second chance. No, you created that. Because God is only love. That's it. I also got, there's also the same thing is about heaven. People experience heaven. They believe it's heaven. They believe heaven exists. So they go to this heavenly realm and hardly nobody's there. Maybe Mary, maybe Jesus is there. And they realize, hey, wait, there's nobody here. There's nothing happening here. Yeah, because you created that. Because on the other side, basically everything is heaven because it's all from God. Everything is everything. There's not a designated place. Okay? Now, there's different dimensions, yes. There's many realms, yes. But there's not a designated place to say, this is heaven and now you've made it. No.
Or you're in hell, and that's over here on the left side.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense.
So that's the other thing. Yeah, because in a Christian religion, you're never supposed to get out of hell. I'm talking about never. Okay, so why are hundreds and hundreds are getting out? That you know, we create that. So the other thing is why we came here. We came here to experience what we are not. Okay, we came to basically experience. It is not a school like everybody trying to say, a lot of spiritual teachers, my soul needs to grow. Now, your soul is perfect on the other side. But think of it like this. On the other side, you have all this knowledge. It's like you read the book on how to drive a car, but you never driven the car. And you come in this third 3D density to actually experience how to drive the car. Because on the other side, it's too high density. Okay. So you come here to experience how to drive the car. And that's the whole thing. We come here to experience. Now, in that experience, do you get something out of it, or you get something? Yeah, probably, sure. You have something extra is added to your soul, but it's not making your soul better than another soul, or it's not because my soul needs it, and otherwise I don't grow. No. Having this experience is an experience that you have, and other souls can access it once you're on the other side, but it's quite not the same as experiencing it. Because when you experience it on the other side, you cannot change it. Let's say you're a spirit on the other side, and you want to see how it was like to be Elvis. So you go to the Akashic Records, and you go to his life, and you go and trade energies. And you actually will feel how it feels to be Elvis, but you cannot change anything that Elvis did already. You see? So you can't change that life. You're like a robot in that life to feel how he does it. But the person who actually did it, they have a little something extra about it. And that's the whole point. And that's what we come to experience what we're not. Because, for example, you're white and you're in a white room and everything you see is white. Guess what? You don't know you're white. Unless you see a black room or a green room or a purple room. And you say, oh, I'm the white room. It's the same on the other side. If you're experiencing only love, security, you don't even know what fear feels like. But then when you come here and you experience the illusion of fear, no love, even death, which is illusion, you can never die. Then when you go back, you say, oh, wow, look what I, this is amazing what we have.
Really interesting stuff.
You see my point? And that's the whole point. That's why I say we come here to experience what we're not.
Do you think there are some things that we need to take on this physical form in this place to experience that we couldn't in the other realm? And just as spirit beings?
Most definitely. Most definitely, because some things are too low density.
Yeah.
Okay. 3D is a low density. Okay. On the other side, it's a much higher density.
Yeah, but we can learn a lot by coming down here. I shouldn't say coming down, but as you put it, this density, this realm, there are a lot of things to learn.
Well, not learn, but experience, my friend. Experience, because what you're going to understand is that your soul on the other side does not need to learn, or it does not need it. It's just an experience. And that's what people got to get, because that's a human way of thinking. Oh, I have to go to school. I have to learn. There's something. It's not. It's just an experience. Because when you go back, it's not that, oh, I really needed to know how it felt to be lost and have no love. I really needed to know. Not really.
But through the experience, we gain something.
Oh, you do gain something from the experience, but it's not, how can I say, it's not your soul is better or more wiser. It's just something added. Because the thing is, like I said, if I want to experience, like I said, Evel Knievel, who jumping motorcycles, I want to experience how it felt to be in the air on a motorcycle, I could go into Akashic Records and experience it. But I couldn't experience it. I only could experience it from his eyes, from his viewpoint, from his feelings or emotions.
But you're still different after you had that experience. Something changed within you because you experienced it.
You mean my near-death experience?
No, if you went back and experienced Elvis's life, to use your example, or Evel Knievel.
Yeah, you have an extra experience under your belt, but it's not going to make you more worthy or more powerful than another soul.
No, not in comparison, but we've done it for a reason.
Yeah, we've done it to experience.
We got something from it, or what was the point?
Well, what we got is the experience.
Yeah. Okay, when you were in this hospital room and you stepped out of your body.
Yeah.
What was the word you used? Did you jump out? Did you just step out?
No, I just said I'm out. I popped out. I like I would jump out of this chair. Boom. That's how what happened. The minute my heart did the last beat, I popped out.
Did you also feel like you went somewhere else or like you were in that hospital room the whole time? Some people feel like they travel someplace. Some people don't.
I just felt that the time was different.
Okay, that makes sense.
Okay, I probably was dead for about 20 minutes. But on the other side, it felt like hours. Like I was playing around. I was laughing. It just felt like at least more than almost 2 hours, it felt like, in spiritual time. But in human time, it was probably about 20 minutes, 25 minutes at best.
Let's talk about the choice.
Okay.
Tell me again about your choice to come back or to stay there.
God said, I felt first that somebody was watching me, and then I heard a voice. And it was from behind me. I felt somebody was watching me. And I didn't feel that before. Before, I felt alone, and I was just having a ball like a kid. Like I said, it turned into a little bit into Bugs Bunny. Because I had these powers, and I said, wow, I could do that. Wow, let's try this. Hey, what if I put a little shake? When I left my body, it was like I left an old shirt on the chair. I had no concern about that body. Because I knew that this is the real me. But I was just at the same time kind of discovering as I was going along.
And then what were you told when you decided to come back?
Yeah, it said, if you don't go back now, you might have to stay. And it was not an order. It was not a command. It was very gentle, very loving. But it was letting me know that at this point in time, even though there's no time, but at this point, if you don't go back now, you might have to stay. Because your heart can't stay stopped for that long.
Yeah, if it's been 20 minutes, that's a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
Brain damage is going to start happening. And
yeah, it was at that point. So I knew, I said, oh, yeah, that's right. Because I was having so much fun on the other side, I had forgotten about the Bible. I said, oh, yeah, that's right. I'm answering God. Oh, yeah, that's right. And then I pointed myself at the body and I jumped back in.
All right, let's jump back into where you were before I got you sidetracked. You jump back in your body. Let's talk about what happened after that.
Okay, a lot of things happened after that. I jumped back in my body.
You're still really sick, right?
I jumped back in my body and my heart starts to beat and I sleep there for a while. And then they check me again and they am able to leave, okay? And the thing is, when I came back, I got these gifts, spiritual gifts that I had no idea. I learned that I have them by accident.
And that's where we're going to pick it up in part two of our interview with Dennis Bullock, discussing spiritual gifts and specifically the ones he came back with and how he put them to use in his life. I hope you'll join us then. But for now, if you haven't already hit that follow or subscribe button, now's the time to do it. And if you want to help us continue to put out this kind of quality content, head on over to roundtripdeath.com. Look for that itty-bitty donate button in the upper right-hand corner. Until then, I wish you everything good that you're looking for in this life and the next.